The business of creating and selling social robots is risky. Many companies have tried to sell social robots, and only few have succeeded to sustain their business over a longer period of time. Aldebaran, or Software Robotics as it is known today, is one of the biggest companies selling social robots to human-robot interaction researchers. Their Nao and Pepper robots are being wildly used in the research community. I had the chance to talk with Amit Kumar Pandey, the head principal scientist at SoftBank Robotics. This is the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast. I am your host, Christoph Bartnick. Amit, your company has evolved over the years. Could you walk us through its major stages?
It started as a startup, I think, in France, which is software, Aldebaran Robotics at that time. And then it was the Nao robot, which brought the fame to the company. And then SoftBank entered in the company in the sense that they wanted to have a kind of a robot for their business application. And then it became Aldebaran SoftBank Group. When I entered, it was I think Aldebaran Robotics, then I saw Aldebaran SoftBank Group, and now it is completely SoftBank Robotics.
SoftBank, a gigantic multinational technology company that started in Japan, bought this small French robotics company in 2012. SoftBank is otherwise known for its investments in many other successful companies, such as Alibaba, Vodafone Japan, and Yahoo Japan. Why was such a multi-billion dollar company interested in a small and emerging robotics company from France? The answer is Pepper, the robot, not the spice.
And then the story of the Pepper robot is somewhat different because it was a SoftBank group who wanted a robot to serve in their stores in Japan, in SoftBank stores. And then they were looking for a good partner to start and develop this kind of robot. And that's why the initial idea behind the development of Pepper robot and initial use case was almost clear in the mind that it has to work for B2B application and it has to be interacting with the people in the stores. And that's how the design of the robot was initiated, that how it should be looking, which kind of face it should have, bigger eyes like manga-like characters to better fitting in the Japanese culture, and then joints to bow. So this was from the beginning, this was for that purpose. So the mass production was also in the mind, and then the use cases. So that's how there were two different branches of the robot development. One Romeo, which was mostly on the research side, and then this was supposed to be a consumer product in the future.
Romeo? Only few will have heard about this robot.
The Romeo robot was really intended to be a research platform. Like we try to do lots of innovation on the robot, try to design fingers, eyes of the Romeo, have some bio-inspiration, test walking algorithm. So it was a collaborative project, which you can say it was a French-funded project in which more than 12 partners were there behind this robot. So yeah, initially it was Romeo, then Romeo 2 project. So that was always for us not intended to be a kind of commercial platform. It was to check the use case of the robot, that if a humanoid robot can assist a person to walk, not only provide a cognitive support, but also to provide a physical support and assistance. We try to learn from that robot and import on the Nao robot some of the algorithm or some of the use cases.
How involved is Aldebaran and SoftBank Robotics still in the research of robots?
Our idea that let us try to solve some of the real challenges together with the community, and with that we try to open up some of our challenge. We try to build a project together, and that's how we are still continuing in many European projects. So at the moment we have around 6 European projects running.
Wow.
And they are in different directions. Like some of them are in education, some of them are in healthcare, some of them are simply improving the capabilities of the robot and as well as the hardware of the robot. So we really try to involve the community, and that's why we are still involved in this type of projects.
But back to the SoftBank and Aldebaran relationship. How did these initially separated companies start to work together?
Yeah, so as far as I know, the R&D, the main R&D center was still Paris office, because we have the biggest R&D force there. Then we have design, which was being done in close collaboration with our Chinese counterpart, our Japanese counterpart. And I think the production was like the real fabrication of the robot, at least rest of the body was in China. So this is how, but it was the SoftBank group who was deciding that who should be the partner for the production and who should be other kind of partner in the project. But in terms of R&D, it was close collaboration between the rest of the SoftBank team in Japan and then the team in Paris.
One could be under the impression that SoftBank only acquired Aldebaran to build the Pepper robots for its stores. Those robots are more PR than actual use. So was this whole acquisition nothing but a big PR campaign? As usual, things are a bit more complicated. In 2018, SoftBank also heavily invested in another major robotics company, Boston Dynamics, which is famous for its four-legged robots that can perform acrobatic tricks. These fascinating robots do not yet have any real-world deployment, and they are not a product you can purchase, not even researchers can. Although they did announce that they intend to sell their Spot Mini robot in 2019. How does this acquisition fit into the company's robotics strategy?
SoftBank has invested in Boston Dynamics, that's what I can say. And still we are not sure, at least I am not sure, that it is part of the SoftBank robotics, because SoftBank is an umbrella company and then it has many companies. And then I think we are still seeing that how the Boston Dynamics will be part of SoftBank robotics or not, or things like that. But these things are not very clear to me at the moment.
While some robotic companies are being bought by large multinationals, others are forced to shut down. In the past years, we saw several promising social robotics companies shut down. Willow Garage with their PR2 robot. Rethink Robotics, founded by MIT professor Rodney Brooks and developer of the famous Baxter robot. Jibo, again founded by an MIT professor, this time Cynthia Brazell, also stopped operating after having received millions in investments. What is going on in the market? Are social robots doomed?
From my perspective, I don't think that there is something to worry. It is that you have to just create a bigger ecosystem and be one of the players of that ecosystem to survive, and then find different opportunities and use cases. And it is growing. This type of robots are the next thing after a smartphone. So you have something which is mobile, at least some part of it, and this type of things should be coming in the market. And if they are not successful, or if it is getting stopped, perhaps it is not only because the money, but because of the bigger ecosystem which has to be created to sustain or to create different kind of apps, to have the marketing, to have the fleet management. All these things should be working together. Like for the paper robot, when it launched in Japan, SoftBank used its mobile phone fleet management to have this distribution and then the services of the robot. So since it is something emerging, it needs a bigger support. And never before in the history we have tried this type of thing. So it is a lesson to learn for everyone.
When the Now or Pepper robot are switched on, their brains are empty. They cannot do anything. Researchers and developers need to create all the behaviors from scratch. What makes the Now and Pepper robot so attractive for researchers is not necessarily the reasonably reliable hardware, but the software used to program them. Its graphical approach enables even non-programmers to create high-level behaviors. In the multidisciplinary nature of HRI research, this is very useful.
It is the same feedback I used to get even from our people, like they are from different disciplines, so they are not very good in programming, but they can simply use this interface, drag and drop like interface, and connecting different blocks, and then you can play with the robot, do some high level behavior. So it is interesting in that sense. And even we used to get similar feedback from outside, like you were saying, that one of the bottleneck for the robots to be used by the research community is that their code should be running even after 2 weeks. And it is possible with the complete development environment which is provided with the robot and easy to use interface with the robot. So even if you are updating something, system is running. So
having the tools in place to create behaviors is of course only the start. You need a strong community that uses these tools to create useful applications for the end users.
Important, and that's what was one of the design requirements of the robots, so that people should be able to use it, like build up a new apps on the robot, and robots should be running based on the apps, and then this will give a diversity to the robot and also the personality to the robot in the future. And even that is not enough, I think, as a researcher, because robot might be doing the same thing every day. So we have to push to the next step where it should be learning, and then it should be adopting. So that's what I think we will be able to keep the community and also the interest of the individual in this type of robots.
But even if Now and Pepper have a lively community that creates applications, neither of them is particularly good at performing any physical tasks. Neither can bring you a drink, do the dishes, or even open the door for you. The application domains for your robots seem to be communication with the user. Recently, Google, Amazon, and others have introduced virtual assistants, such as Alexa, that communicate with the users. Moreover, they are connected to a very large ecosystem. Alexa allows you to purchase products and control your smart home. Many argue that the rise of virtual assistants made robots like Jibo obsolete. Will Now and Pepper not face the same destiny?
Yeah, because if you are talking about Now or the Pepper robot, so at least they have mobility. And once you have a kind of mobility, you can reach to the people in need. And you can also guide people. So there are, for me, there are three basic pillars, like interaction, mobility, which is navigation, and then manipulation. So we are trying to achieve a pair of them, a couple of them, the interaction and navigation. And as I mentioned, the manipulation was not the core focus of this robot, because we have to think about the needs, and then we have to find the affordability of the robot as well. So we cannot put everything in a robot which is not supposed to be more than 20,000 euro in principle. At the beginning, at least this robot was designed to have a body for having expressivity and trying to engage people. So I think in that manner it is more successful than a tabletop or simply having a smartphone. It is able to provide some social signal, pointing, and then having more engagement, engaging behavior.
I can imagine that some robotics companies, that they might not have the market knowledge. So I think investigating that and really doing the user research, which I know companies are becoming more and more aware of that, but still it's not really common to do a lot of user research knowledge.
In a recent survey, only 15% of the companies that signed up for a Pepper robot in 2015 intend to renew their 3-year contract with SoftBank. The effort to operate and maintain a fleet of robots is often underestimated, and Pepper's novelty has worn off. Other companies have recognized the importance of usage scenarios for the development of human-robot interaction. I talked to Franziska Kirsten from Blue Ocean Robotics about how they develop robots.
this RobiX program that is from idea to a market-ready solution product. So if you're, for example, a hospital and you would like to have, let's take the example of our actual robot, a patient lifting robot that we have developed together with a hospital, we would first look at, is there actually a need of a patient lifting robot? What is out there? Would that be a good business case? We would create together with the end user, after data collection and some workshops, a concept on this. And see whether this is possible and whether that would be a good product to commercialize in the end. And then move on to, after finding the funding, move on to actually building the prototype for that. Then presenting that to customers, not only that one hospital, but presenting that to other customers and trying to commercialize it.
Yeah, so that's what I mentioned, that you have to really identify the real use case of the robot. So it depends that how the robot is being designed. First you are designing a robot and then trying to find a use case, or you already have a kind of idea, the principal use case of the robot, and then you are designing the robot for that purpose. So perhaps if there are this type of mismatch sometime, then that robot might not be useful for the purpose on which it was shown, and perhaps it might be useful for another purpose. So that's why use case and real end user input based designing is one of the key thing.
Deploying the Pepper robot in hundreds, if not thousands, of SoftBank retail stores across Japan was a major endeavor. Operating in a noisy environment with multiple speakers and in the presence of background music make understanding the user's heart, even for humans. What lessons did you learn from this deployment?
Yeah, globally you can simply say that it is not only robotics. Once you are putting robot in the real environment, in real use cases, you have to address many other problems. That includes the simple problems like the connection to Wi-Fi, and also that how much delay is there between a robot when it is listening something and responding to you. So you have to really address beyond robotics things, even the weight of the robot and then how much it is computing. These are the really the lessons which are telling us that we have to involve a bigger group and bigger diversity of the people. They should be coming from psychology, coming from hardware, from mechatronics, even people who are expert in animation, to have a more graceful body language of the robot. Yeah, we were aware about this type of practical issues, so that's why the multimodality of interaction and input output was one of the reasons to have at least find a plan B once some interaction is not working very fine. So you have touch screen as well, so you can communicate through that.
One of the plan B's for Pepper is its touch screen on its chest. Users can press on the desired option instead of speaking.
It is really diverse. It depends on the kind of user robot has in front. Like if there are children, they will just jump in to touch the hand, body, screen, everything. And then if there are some experienced user, they are knowing that how to interact with the robot. So they try to give proper attention to the screen as well to get proper information or to provide proper information.
Usage scenarios seem to be crucial for the development of a social robot. How does this work at your company?
But this is a challenge which the whole community has to work, and we are also working on this, that how a device like this robot can listen at the same time when it is speaking, or if there is a background noise, and even if there are people of different age, like child, elder, or adult people, they have different pitch. So we have to address this, but we are aware about this. We are, when we got verification that it is a real problem, because we put robot in a realistic situation, really working, not for the test purpose. And we are also having some European project on which we are discovering this type of issue and trying to address it.
Francesca, your company has also deployed many robots. How many of them are still in use, and what did you learn from the deployment?
I named the medication food transportation robots that I know that they are still being used every day, and there's of course still challenges that they tackle every day. That's of course not easy, but they stick to it. We've also worked with social robots in the schools and elderly homes. And some of them, they still use them because they see the good results they can have, especially.
So would that be the power robot?
The Xeno robot, okay. For example. We had the Cue Ball JustoCat from Sweden. That's similar to the power robot, the Seal. The UV disinfection robot. It's a robot that is disinfecting in hospitals. That I started when I joined the company 4 years ago. So it took 4 years, a little bit longer than we anticipated. So there's also a challenge. But well, it has been sold now to hospitals in Thailand. We've gotten it started up in Hong Kong as well. So they're in Dubai, I think, as well. Yeah, there's interest. We have a lot of customers in the pipeline, but of course it takes a while to introduce that because it also changes the workflow of cleaning in the hospital. It doesn't substitute for the cleaning, but it adds on. So it actually adds time to the process, but in return for saving lives because you're killing more bacteria. But we haven't gotten to that stage yet. It's the last step of our development model, which is called a Robi scale-up in the end, and we're preparing for this step. They are still used. I think our program back then on how we introduced these robots was really good. So we stayed with these organizations for around 16 weeks, having contact with them every week, checking on the real end users that use these robots every day, making sure that they are satisfied with working with these solutions, because I think that's really important, seeing that these robots change the workflow. They change how people work, and people need to change, and some don't like that, and you need to work with them so they adjust to this new technology.
Blue Ocean Robotics fills the gap between the robot manufacturers who produce a technology platform and the customers who have a specific need. Blue Ocean Robotics creates, tests, and deploys the applications that in the end make the robots useful. The market for HRI research platforms is limited. There are only that many universities and research institutes that work in this area and that can afford a social robot. It will remain difficult for robotic companies to continuously sell their research robots. Only once true applications are introduced, these robots will become useful for the consumer market. Understanding the needs and the constraints of the user is paramount. This is what makes human-robot interaction so interdisciplinary. You need engineers, psychologists, and designers to create truly useful, interesting robots.
But you are right that people always have expectations which is beyond the current state of the art. And that's why we have to solve together as the community. But at least we should know what are their primary expectations. And we cannot know unless we will put a kind of robot in their day-to-day life. And that's what we are trying to do now. So we designed something, we are getting huge feedback. And then we have to improve because as a researcher, we can improve in many directions of AI. But we have to prioritize. And at least we know where to prioritize now.
Human-robot interaction has still many miles to go before we achieve our robotic dreams. Where do you see the future and the obstacles in artificial intelligence?
Only AI or the marriage of AI and robotics? These are two things. Like AI is trying to solve many challenges, but they are not solving it from the robotics perspective. Just to give an example, like you can have very good vision system with a stationary camera, but once it is mounted on the robot head and when the robot is interacting and looking around, the performance of the same camera and the same algorithm is very bad. And so we have to really, if we want to bring AI in robotics, we have to show the real robotics problem to the AI community so that we can better solve it. at the moment perception is a kind of bottleneck which we have to solve, and then the speech recognition, which is again the problem even in the AI community, that how you can have at least 80% speech recognition for children, not only for a specific kind of age group of people, even for elderly. So this type of bottlenecks AI has to still solve for robotics.
Let's hope that we will have many more robotic startups than shutdowns. And maybe you can create the killer app that will be the breakthrough for social robots. Join me again next time in the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast.